Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's talk about these, what happened in Cuba. The diplomats have been pulled because of these supposed sonic attacks. We have gotten very little information about this, and possibly because it's really not understood what happened. Joining us on the phone right now is Robert Bartholomew. He's an American-born medical sociologist, writer, journalist, human rights advocate. I could go on and on and on in his bio, but we'll just jump on the phone and chat with him. Hey, Robert, how are you this morning?
How's it going?
Going well. Where are you located at right now?
Right now, I grew up in upstate New York.
Sure.
And now I am in Auckland, New Zealand.
How does a kid from upstate New York end up in Auckland, New Zealand?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm teaching down here. It's a beautiful place and it reminds me of upstate New York.
Was it just one of those things that life takes you on weird twists and turns and one job led to another and suddenly you're in New Zealand? Or is it a chance to see the world and see other cultures and live in other places that took you there?
A and B. I'd say both of the above.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Let's talk a little bit about what, and thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us. We love guests from Auckland, New Zealand, because it's a great time for them to be on the radio at 3 a.m. in Chicago. So these sonic attacks in Cuba, there's this story explains that instead of a sonic attack or something that we still don't understand, that it could be something like a mass hysteria. Explain to me what that means.
Well, you know, this report that's coming out of Cuba from the State Department, it's very confusing. There are indications that it's continuing and then it stops and it's continuing again. When you talk about mass hysteria, aka mass psychogenic illness, it's kind of like the placebo effect in reverse. You can make yourself sick. You can also make yourself well with a placebo effect. It works in reverse. It's the power of the mind. And when you look at this case from afar, it looks for all the world that it's real. I mean, 22 American diplomats so far have been affected since last December. There have been a number of diplomats from Canada as well reportedly affected. And the State Department says it's true. And when you look at the symptoms, there's a whole bunch of symptoms, but they also include brain trauma and permanent hearing loss. And certainly brain trauma and permanent hearing loss are not psychogenic psychological symptoms. And so when you look at it, it's like there's no way it can be mass hysteria. But when you look at it closer, it all falls apart and unravels. And the only plausible explanation is mass psychogenic illness. I do not believe the government. I'm not one of these conspiracy theories or theorists or anything
sure.
like that. But when you have a situation like this, you need to very closely follow the facts, not as you hope that they're going to be or think they are, but as they are. And right now, I'm very suspicious because the government hasn't really released any supporting information whatsoever. Have you heard the sound that's been released?
I saw that that has been released, but no, I have not heard the sound.
It sounds like, I mean, the government came out with this recently. The Associated Press got a hold of it and
right.
released it. And it's kind of like saying, well, you're not saying it's real. Here's the sound. Okay. And it sounds like a band of high-pitched cicadas.
Mm-hmm.
It's an irritating whining sound, and I would say it's the audio equivalent of the fuzzy Bigfoot photo. it means nothing. It could be anything, just to have a sound. So they say things like, well, there's verified brain trauma. And they asked them to clarify that. What do you mean by that? Because that's not really a medical term. And they said, well, it's something like a concussion, but it's not a concussion. When they say hearing loss, is it permanent? How many people have lost their hearing? Is it 17? Is it one? Why haven't they released that information? If it's 17, why don't you come out and say, well, 17 people have reported hearing loss, and You don't have to give up the names of the people. Just look at the medical records and give us the symptoms. And most of these symptoms, I mean, fatigue, insomnia, headaches, dizziness, I have probably half of those every week. They're very common symptoms. And experts in acoustics have said that there's no sonic device in the world that can cause brain trauma. It's just not possible through the known laws of physics. If you try to focus a device on a building, 99% of the waves are going to bounce off anyway. And I've gotten kind of hate mail from people saying, well, you've claimed that it's mass psychogenic illness, but the military has these devices and secret machines that they develop that could cause these. No, they don't. It's, you know, classic conspiracy theories and stuff like that. If they have these devices, how come they weren't using them to clear people in Raqqa and in these places in the Middle East where they're having all kinds of problems?
Yeah, you'd think if we have this technology, there'd be places we'd be using it to disperse people or to, you know, get in places where we don't want to drop bombs or shoot people or something like that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, the strange thing about this is, it's not really the embassy. When you look at it more closely, it's people, they've reported having heard these sounds and feeling unwell in hotels. They've had the same thing in their homes. And a person has said, and there's been a number of these reports where they say, well, I was in the hotel and I felt unwell and I heard this noise. Okay. But there's a person standing right next to him that didn't feel unwell. It's just very vague. And what I find fascinating here is we've kind of been down this road before. And the road is about 190 miles from Chicago, Illinois. And that is in the 1980s and 1990s, in Kokomo, Indiana, they had the famous Kokomo hum scare.
I don't know about the famous Kokomo hum scare. This is the first I've heard of the Kokomo hum scare. Okay, tell us about this.
Well, it really started in 1999 in Kokomo, but there's other places where they've heard the hum. And this was a really big thing. It was in all the major papers at the time. People were hearing a mysterious hum, mm-hmm. and it was supposedly hurting their health. And it was things like fatigue, insomnia, ringing in their ears, headaches, dizziness, just like people are reporting now. And there were rumors that it was the U.S. military doing some kind of secret testing. And there were over 90 residents of Kokomo, Indiana, that reported these symptoms. And they'd done, there was a local guy there that had done some tests, and he claimed he had heard this noise and recorded it. And they had the head of the Acoustical Society of America had listened to it, and he said at the time, he said, it could be anything. I mean, it's just some kind of noise that they picked up. In the early 90s in Taos, New Mexico, they had the Taos hum. In England, there's been a number of different hums as well. And this has kind of waxed and waned over time, and it's kind of been forgotten. But when you go back in time, you can trace these hum scares going back to the 1940s, and it's very similar stuff. There's some kind of secret weapon that's been developed. There are these vague symptoms. It's happening in people's homes. And really, it's, to me, it's the equivalent of Bigfoot and UFOs. It's very vague stuff.
Okay, so I can understand, yeah, like in Kokomo or places like that, somebody hears something, they think it feels sick. Other people say, yeah, the same thing, and so it builds. But if we've got diplomats in Cuba, so people that, you know, I would assume kind of are not mentally unstable, because, you know, when you hear about the UFO things or things like that, you start thinking, well, are these people stable, things like that. So assuming we've got diplomats that are stable, things like that, explain to me how it becomes... Explain to me the theory of mass hysteria, because I could understand that, like, you're like, well, they're just feeling things, but why would a bunch of different people report this? Is it because they're hearing it from one another and then thinking that? Is it just coincidence that 22 people reported some sort of symptoms?
Here's what I think has happened. There's a backdrop to this, and all cases of mass hysteria, mass psychogenic illness, they don't occur in a vacuum. There's always some kind of backdrop, a context. And the context here is that during the Cold War years, and even when we had a presence in Cuba, not a strong presence, but diplomats in there in the 2000s, there were stories of Cuban agents harassing American diplomats in Cuba. It's famous among CIA folklore, and it actually happened where they, when the diplomats were at the embassy, they'd sneak into their house and they would turn books in their bookcases backwards just to let them know they were there and that, you know, someone's watching them. Occasionally it would get a bit more escalated. They might put dog poo on the floor, something like that. They would follow them as they're driving through the city, and they would follow their car and kind of cut them off so they would have a harder time driving. But pretty minor stuff overall. Nothing so malicious that, you know, that threatened their life or anything. And so this is well known in CIA folklore. And so when the diplomats went back to Cuba, once they reopened relations and established relations again, everybody was well aware of this. And I think you had a small group of people reporting some symptoms, and they're aware of this history, and they're thinking, well, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe they've done something to the water. Maybe they're doing something to the air. And then somebody heard a noise and felt unwell, and it started. And then it kind of takes on a life of its own, and it snowballs. And I think that's what's happened in this case. And you have to remember, the first cases supposedly occurred in December, but they didn't really get reported until February. And the first cases occurred, in late November. And then they got reported in the news in February. Well, that's after the Trump administration got elected, and then they took office. And the Trump administration has a history of conspiracy theories and reading into things that aren't necessarily there. And I think that's what's happened here, because they're coming out and they're saying things like, well, we're not really sure what's caused this. And we're not really sure if it's the Cubans or not, although we pulled some diplomats from the embassy because they're not keeping us safe. Well, if you're really not sure, how come you're saying it's some kind of sonic device?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just so interesting. So, you know, I'm reading the article where, you know, and they quote you and other people that say, you know, it's a hot Trump's, and I don't want to blame that. I don't want to sound like, because you said, you know, you're not a black helicopter guy, but here we are saying, well, Trump takes over and now this is happening. But the theory is that let's try not to blame the administration at all, but just say that. Barack Obama reopens the embassy, starts establishing friendly relationships. The administration that takes over would not have probably done that, has more tough line stance on Cuba, is thinking about closing things back down and pulling out, things like that. So the theory is that now it becomes a little more of a difficult working situation for the diplomats that are there. Now things are tense again. There's some stress there. And so maybe that leads to a high anxiety working environment where something could trigger something and suddenly people start feeling unwell, maybe because they're more stressed out about their job than ever before and their working situation, and that triggers this type of thing, possibly?
Well, that sounds like something I could have said. I mean, that's exactly right. You always have some type of stressor in situations like this. And look, there was a famous case in Europe in June of 1999, and there were some students, and it relates to this, there were some students at a school in Bornem, Belgium, and a student walked up to a Coca-Cola machine and got a can of Coca-Cola, and he started to drink it, and he said, it smells a bit funny, and it's really fizzy, and then he felt unwell, and he went to the nurse, and the nurse went around the school from room to room. This was an elementary school, and said, has anybody drank Coke from the machine here, and do you feel unwell? Well, you can imagine a whole bunch of students then suddenly felt unwell. They took them to the hospital. There was absolutely nothing wrong with them. And they had, over the next several weeks, they had nearly 1,000 reports of people drinking Coca-Cola and Coke products and feeling unwell and being rushed to the hospital. Coca-Cola was banned in Belgium in the summer of 1999. They lost $250 million from that. And they also had some cases in France as well from this. And as it turned out, what had happened was the Coca-Cola company didn't want to give up the secret recipe they had. So they said, well, look, we'll look at ourselves. And they looked and they found that on the Coke, outside of the Coke cans, some fungicide, anti-fungicide chemical had rubbed off the pallets and got on the Coke cans. And they blamed it on that. And the Belgian government did their own study, and they said, no, that's in parts per billion, and it couldn't possibly have caused these symptoms. And the conclusion was it was mass psychogenic illness. That was the conclusion of the Belgian government when they did their very thorough investigation on that. And really, it's the power of the mind. If somebody came to the studio right now and handed you a can of Coke and you started drinking it, and then somebody else started to read the news and said, oh, there's a Coca-Cola scare where it's allegedly been poisoned. Well, you might start to vomit and probably feel nauseous and might get a headache, but there's nothing wrong with you. And, you know, it's the power of the mind. It's like being in a house at night and it's midnight and you hear a noise and all of a sudden you're scared. But if it's broad daylight, there's no problem.
Well, here's my correlation to it, Robert. Whenever the expiration date on the milk hits, at 11:30 at night, I could have a bowl of cereal. But at 12:15 a.m., if I open the fridge and the milk has expired now on the date it's on, I will open up that milk and smell it, and it will smell rancid as could be to me. It's the moment that that date hits. And I know it's still good for a week or two or whatever, but to me, milk smells rotten whenever the moment strikes that the date on the milk hits. And I'm sure that can't be real.
That's a very good observation. And, you know, I can't let the interview go by without, and I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but Illinois is very famous in the annals of mass psychogenic illness, mass hysteria. I have a catalog I've collected over the last 20 years of about 3,000 cases. And one of the most famous cases of all occurred in Illinois in 1944. You may have heard of it. It's the famous Mad Gasser of Mattoon. Have you heard of that?
I have not. You're coming up with things, Kokomo, and I've never heard of any of these. The Mad Gasser of Mattoon. All right, explain this to us.
Well, it was these people were reporting to the police that they're being gassed at home, usually in their beds at night, like somebody would open up the window and spray them with a noxious gas. And it was thought to be a Nazi sympathizer who had, some guy had escaped in the area. This is in the area of Mattoon. And they thought he was going around spraying people with this poison gas in September of 1944. And there were at least 30 victims in this episode. It went over for several weeks. It was nausea, dry mouth, palpitations, difficulty concentrating. And the police eventually concluded that there never was a gasser. And the victims were redefining a variety of mundane events as gasser-related. Things like noticing an unusual odor at the same time your leg had fallen asleep, or a chimney flue that had been backing up, so you smell this unusual smell. And once it got... These cases, usually you have an initial sensational case that gets reported in the newspaper. And then everybody's looking for it. It's similar to UFOs in a way. There's like a big sighting, and then everybody starts searching the skies at night for evidence and seeing if it's there. And then they start redefining ever-present things as UFO-related.
Well, in a simpler term, whenever and this is maybe unrelated, but so if you start looking for a new car, so say, you know, it's what, every 10 years or so, you might start thinking about a car. And then you think, oh, you know, we really like this one van, say whatever. And then I swear for the next 2 weeks on the road, I will see that type of car over and over and over and over again. And it's there all the time, I'm sure. But suddenly it's in my mind. And there I see it left and right, left and right, left and right. Like, wow, there's thousands and thousands of these things. I never noticed this before.
That's a really good observation, because in the early 1950s, there was atomic tests going on in the Pacific. And right after a series of atomic tests, people in Washington State started noticing these little pits on their windshields that they attributed to the atomic tests. And in fact, they'd been there all along. And it was just that people were starting to notice them then, because somebody had reported it, and then now everyone's looking, instead of looking through their windshield, they're looking at their windshield.
Mm.
And it just underscores the power of the mind. You know, what's really interesting is on October 30th of 1938, they had the famous Martian invasion scare, where Orson Welles was broadcasting a play, very famous in the history of radio.
Sure.
What a lot of people don't realize is, many people that night actually experienced what they heard on the radio. For example, the broadcast described these Martians using heat rays and dispersing this poison gas. Well, people actually called the police coughing and choking and saying they could smell the poison gas.
Yeah.
Other people said that they could actually feel the heat rays. People took rags and were shoving them in keyholes and underneath doors to keep the gas out. And it's a good example of the power of the human mind. There was a case back in 1978 in Rotterdam, Holland, where in a zoo, this panda had escaped. And there were over 100 sightings of the panda over the next several days all over the country. And they eventually found the panda. It was just a few hundred meters from the zoo where it had escaped, and it had been hit by a train. And they looked at it, and it's like, well, this got hit right away. It's been dead for a while.
Yeah.
So what was everybody seeing?
Yeah. Hey, Robert, we've got to take a break for the news. Can you hold on for a little bit? Are you willing to talk with us a bit longer?
Sure.
All right, excellent. Hold on 1 second. Robert Bartholomew, it's fascinating. There are, the more he brings it up, the more you think of different times in life where we've heard of things sort of like this. I had not heard of the Mad Gasser of Mattoon, though, I'll tell you that. Quick break in the news next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 is the call-in and text line. We're speaking with Robert Bartholomew. He's a medical sociologist living right now in South Auckland, New Zealand, and chatting with us about the, well, we started out with the sonic attacks, and then the idea of sometimes things in life aren't what we think. Sometimes there's a phenomenon, if phenomenon's the right thing to say, called a mass hysteria, where one person thinks that they saw, did, felt something, and then that kind of catches on, and other people say, yeah, I feel the same thing. I think the same thing. Robert, I keep coming up with correlations here that you've been very kind as to say they make sense. I don't know if all of them do, but I do a lot of work. I have a company outside of here that syndicates a pet radio show. So I work with a lot of pet companies, and Lyme disease in dogs is a real big thing. And we've been working a lot on Lyme issues. And Lyme, as you're probably well aware, here in America is a big issue with the disease. But there's a ton of controversy in human health about Lyme disease and whether or not there really are these people suffering from, quote, chronic Lyme disease. And when I delved into this on the animal side and tried to bring in human health, it really became difficult because the doctors were there's a very divisive area here about Lyme disease in the States. And I was speaking with one doctor who works with pediatric issues, and she explained it to me as, you know, we don't have the science to figure out exactly what's going on with Lyme disease, but she said, but here's what happens. 40-year-old Americans get a tick. They think they have Lyme disease, so a doctor gives them antibiotics, and suddenly they feel better. And she says, Matt, as a 40-year-old man, if I give you antibiotics, you're going to feel better. You've got swollen joints, you've got achiness, you've got all these different things going on. And so they feel that a lot of people just, would doctor prescribes antibiotics, suddenly you feel better. Oh, I'm cured, or it was treated, or I don't have this anymore, or I get off of it and then, oh, I have that again. So there's this big concern. And I wonder if that's sort of like the same thing where we think we feel things and so we assign it to something when sometimes it's just part of life, or you're older, or there's other explanations that we don't want to accept.
Exactly. And, you know, in the mass hysteria literature, mass psychogenic illness, they have this category, it's a fairly rare category, it's called mass hysteria by proxy. And there have been a number of cases like this. When you mention the dogs and pets and stuff like that, there have been a number of cases, one in particular I'm thinking of near Atlanta in Georgia, where at a school, an elementary school, kids had like dark circles under their eyes and were fatigued and having trouble sleeping. And the parents diagnosed them as that there was something wrong with the school. It was a sick school. There was a sick building, and there was some agent in that building that needed to be found. They conducted all these tests. They couldn't find anything. And it wasn't the kids who were saying they were unwell. It was the parents. And there have been a few cases like that, but with pets, the dogs can't tell you that they have a tick. It comes down to the owner, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, the funny thing is in pets, there's a vaccine for Lyme disease. And you're right. It's much tougher in pets to see whether they're lethargic or not, or things like that. But it's interesting, you know, the guy I do the pet show with, we talk about, you know, it's a big thing sometimes in pets now to offer acupuncture. And I think there's a lot of controversy around acupuncture. Like, does it really do anything or not? Or do you just think it does something? And he says, it's interesting, this thought that, you know, pets aren't going to think, oh, I had this procedure, I feel better. So if there's a pet who has back pain or is walking gingerly or doing all these different things, and then you try acupuncture, and then they're walking and doing things better, you know, seem to be relieved of those symptoms. Is it a better indicator that maybe that actually works, because pets aren't going to think about it in the same way that you or I would, where we, oh boy, I really do feel better, and maybe it is all just psychosomatic.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of, Lourdes, over in Europe and Fatima and places like that, you have people that go there to get healed. And there's a common saying, I think it's at Lourdes, where there's a whole pile of crutches where people have gone there on crutches and even some wheelchairs, and they left the wheelchair there and walked away. And the saying is, you see a lot of crutches in wheelchairs, but you don't see any wooden legs. And I mean, it's because I've seen this. I've seen a number of years ago at university, this faith healer came to the university, and there was a girl there who had long suffered from this back pain, and she couldn't reach down and touch the floor. And she came up and she touched the Bible, and they prayed together, and she was able to touch the floor, and it was stunning. And 2 weeks later, she wasn't able to touch the floor again. But, I mean, at that time, and I think, you know, who knows, maybe there is a God, and in maybe there was some kind of miraculous event that was occurring there. But it seemed to be temporary in terms of that person's case. My brother, who happens to be a Bigfoot researcher in upstate New York, and I'm a sympathetic skeptic, I don't believe in any of it, but he...
That's got to be really weird for you as somebody who's debunking all this stuff to be like, yeah, well, my brother, he's researching Bigfoot.
Makes for interesting dinner conversations.
This is why you're in New Zealand, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, he was recently on that TV show Finding Bigfoot. And
oh, my God, my kids like watching that stuff. Yeah, well, because then the series would have to end.
Yeah. Well, my favorite's the Ancient Aliens one there, where the ancient alien theorists believe. And I don't mean to make fun of them, but it's so vague and so speculative. But anyway, my brother Paul, about 3 years ago, was perfectly healthy, went to the dentist and had a tooth pulled. And within a few hours, he was in the hospital thinking he was having a heart attack. And they could find nothing wrong with him. And then he starts Googling online, you know, tooth pulled, heart issue, And, you know, there are a cluster of cases around this. And they eventually told him, go see a psychiatrist, because they said, there's nothing wrong with you. We think it's anxiety from having your tooth pulled, and it just kind of tipped you over the edge, and you're having heart palpitations and things like this. Well, eventually, he got tested for Lyme disease, and he believed that he was bitten by a tick, and he went through this treatment with antibiotics and stuff like that. But the interesting thing with that, you brought this up,
yeah,
was that the problem with this is diagnosing it, because the tests for Lyme disease aren't very accurate,
right?
Are they?
No, not in human health.
No, not in humans, and it's a real problem. You can test. He tested negative, so they did another test, and then he tested positive. You know, what if he took another one, probably test negative again? And, you know, was the positive one accurate? I don't know. And whenever you have situations like this where there's ambiguity around health issues, there are all sorts of psychological things that can creep in there.
Yeah, and it really is interesting with the human health, because we were doing this thing on the pet health side, and we wanted to bring in human health because the idea was, you know, just an awareness thing. Because, you know, if you're out rolling around with your dog in the woods or playing in the backyard, things like that, if you find a tick on your dog, and your kids were on the other end of the leash, then it was kind of like a campaign to raise awareness about checking for these things. If your dog has a tick, you should, you know, and to get veterinarians, if they find that your dog has a tick or Lyme disease, to talk to you about, you know, checking yourself, because if you're out in the same places as your dog, you were in a high tick area, maybe, you know, it's we're all about prevention. And when we approached human health about it, we got a lot of pushback, because some of the people with a respected organization were like, listen, what's going to happen is people are going to run to the doctor and demand antibiotics. And they're so concerned about, we're over prescribing antibiotics. We don't want to push people to ask for antibiotics when it's not necessary. That most people, you know, that there's doctors that are just pushing antibiotics as this cure for Lyme disease, when Lyme disease might not even be there, might, you know, it's not in all cases and the testing and everything else. So we got all this pushback like, hey, we don't want to raise more awareness of this because we don't want people asking for antibiotics more than they already do.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk about that and the ambiguity of symptoms, I think most of your listeners can empathize with being in elementary school or possibly even high school, and some kid in the classroom has been identified as having ticks in their hair.
Lice.
And head lice.
Yes.
And
you,
well,
start itching.
Within a few minutes.
Just as you said that, my hair starts itching as soon as the word comes up. As soon as you start telling that story, I knew where you were going, and my head starts itching immediately.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's so easy to do because you become a bit anxious.
Yeah.
And then it's just like you've been outside or something playing sports, you come inside, and then you start feeling a bit sweaty, and you feel like something's crawling on your skin and things like that.
With, you know, when you're talking about, so with things like conspiracy theories, whether it's JFK or 9/11 or different things like that, do you believe that most of that stems from somebody who's sort of, is that sort of a mass hysteria thing too, where people say one thing and then we just glom onto that because of whatever reason, maybe because we're distrusting or we're looking for a reason for something that can't be explained? Is that a lot of what happens with things like that?
There's a big will to believe there. There's mass hysteria, and then there's social delusions. Not delusions in the psychiatric sense, but social delusions where large groups of people believe in something that's not true, like the satanic cult scare of the 1980s and 90s, where kids were supposedly being ritually abused by satanic cultists running daycare centers. The number of people were falsely accused and spent years in prison from that scare alone. But there's a lot of episodes out there where there's no illness involved, because that would be mass psychogenic illness, aka mass hysteria. These are social delusions. I always say, when you hear the sounds of hoofbeats in the night, first think horses, not zebras. But this happens, and these scares, these panics sweep whole countries at a time.
I imagine the Salem witch hunts would have been the same type of thing. Is people start thinking one thing, it spreads around, it becomes a rumor, and then people just glom onto it?
Yeah, and you know, I have to say this. Good history speaks to the present day in present day events. And if you go back to 1691 to 1693 in the Massachusetts Bay Colony in what is now Salem, Danvers, Massachusetts, the events that happened there, the first people who were accused, they were women who stood out because they were different. One woman smoked a pipe and she played shuffleboard late at night with young people. Another one ran a tavern. Another one was a Barbados slave woman named Tituba. And she was the person who actually triggered the beginning of the episode, the first case. Mm. These people were scapegoats. And I cannot help but think that this is an important lesson for even what's going on today. And look, when they had the satanic cult scare of the 80s and 90s and all these people were being falsely accused at daycare centers, it's one of the worst crimes imaginable is for a child to be molested. But there is an even worse crime, and that is for somebody to be falsely accused of having been molested. You know, there was a study that was done a number of years ago. It used to be in the early 80s that psychologists thought that the best eyewitnesses were children because they didn't have preconceived notions and they're just going to say what they saw. Mm-hmm. The problem is they didn't realize that they want to please the people they're talking to and older adults. But there was an interesting study done a number of years ago when all this controversy was going on in the daycare centers, and they took a year 7 or 8 classroom, and they hooked cameras up in the classroom, and they had this guy come in, and he walked over, and he said, "Oh, hi, how are you, Johnny?" And he touched him on the shoulder, walked over, shook somebody's hand, and then patted somebody in the head, and then about 10 minutes later, he walked away. And they waited several days, and then they interviewed the kids as to what happened, and nothing unusual. And then they said, "Okay, Tommy, did that man who came here, did he touch you here? Did he touch you inappropriately?" "He did, didn't he?" And Tommy's like, "Yep, yes, he did." And it's so easy for children to be led astray by leading questions because they want to please the interviewer and they're older, it's a power situation. And they didn't really realize that in the early 80s, but they do now. And I mean, there was a couple who from Texas who I did a radio interview for the national radio here in New Zealand a few weeks ago on this. They were just recently released after having spent over 20 years in prison, and it was concluded that they were innocent.
That's terrifying. Real quick here, because we have to go in a second, Robert, but psychics. So you were talking about how, you know...
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Because my guess is that you're going to say that psychics figure out a way to get you to talk to you about something that's going to pique your interest or something that you're going to want to hear about. You want to believe what they're saying. And so we end up believing what they're saying or... You know, explain to me your theory on psychics.
Well, look, I want to believe. However, let's say there was psychic ability. How does that work? I mean, we have a brain, we have ears, and the organs there are very clear as to this is for hearing. We have the eyes that go back into the brain. How would we have the sixth sense in our brain? How does that develop? I mean, it's such a complicated thing to know something that is... before it even happens. I'm a sympathetic skeptic. I want to believe. If psychics are real, how come you don't see in the newspaper another psychic banned from casino? Psychic wins lottery again. Who predicted September 11th? Nobody that I'm aware of. There is a registry in New York City called the Central Premonitions Registry where people send in predictions. Mm-hmm. And nobody had predicted that. there were a number of predictions that the space shuttle was going to explode when it did, the Challenger. However, what NASA said was, we get letters before every space shuttle launch, sure. And we have even for the Apollo missions. So yeah, I wrote a book called American Hauntings, which looks at famous movies about, like, The Exorcist and Haunting in Connecticut, The Conjuring. And when you look at the evidence of the so-called best cases, I mean, I want to believe that there's psychic phenomena and that we can predict the future, but the evidence just isn't there. I mean, as Carl Sagan once said, wherever we have strong emotions, we're liable to fool ourselves. So we have to be very careful.
Interesting. Robert Bartholomew, an American-born medical sociologist living in South Auckland, New Zealand right now. When do you come back for the holidays? Will Thanksgiving, will you be catching up on Bigfoot with your brother, or what are your plans?
Well, I'm waiting. I just tell my brother, you know, when they find the body, let me know. But, I mean, I have all these episodes, and they still haven't found it yet. Look, I don't make fun of them. It's just that, you know, they're honest, sincere people. Most people are honest, sincere people that see Bigfoot or UFOs. But most UFOs are lights in the night.
Yeah.
You know, they're redefining ambiguous phenomena relative to what they expect to see. 100 years ago, they'd be fairy lights.
Yeah, until the idea of a UFO was presented, right? Until, yeah, nobody ever thought it's somebody from another planet until that idea was put into our heads, probably.
They did a Gallup poll in the late 1940s, right after they had the flying saucer wave of 1947. And they found that 99% of the people, when they asked them open-ended question, did not consider flying saucers to be of an extraterrestrial origin. It was assumed it was some type of secret weapon, government weapon, either the United States or a foreign weapon.
Yeah.
Less than 1% thought it was extraterrestrial. Times have changed.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Robert Bartholomew, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. It was fun. I hope we do it again soon.
Okay, it was a lot of fun. Take care.
All right, hold on. Just want to say goodbye to you before we go away. We'll take a quick break for some spots, and then we'll catch up on the news with David Jennings next, 720 WGN.